Welcome to the Librarian's Guide to Teaching podcast. In today's mini episode, we take a look back at episode number 18 to talk about reflective teaching practices. So in this follow-up episode, we're going to talk about an article from the Teaching Commons at DePaul University called Assessing Reflection, about creating and assessing good reflection questions for student activities. So recently, I was putting together a rubric for the SIFT evaluation module that I'm working on with a colleague. And in the module, we do ask a lot of reflective questions. So we were trying to come up with statements that really allowed us to measure across classes how students did on the activities, because we're also not going to be the only ones using it. We want our whole instruction team of six people to be able to use this whenever a faculty member, you know, wants to teach students about evaluating sources. So we came across this article from the Teaching Commons at DePaul University, which was really helpful for us. We thought we'd chat about this idea today as a look back at that episode about reflective teaching practices. I think in that episode, we really talked about how we reflect on our teaching. So we're taking it on a little spin with assessing students. So what were your main takeaways?
Well, first, I want to say that I really love the way they broke down this topic and only provided two examples. Sometimes I feel like people get overzealous and they try to cram in too many models and it can be overwhelming. So I love the opening where the authors ask about the purpose of reflection. I think instructors don't always think about that, you know. For example, you know, it's totally justifiable to develop an assessment that's just for process and not for actually assessing whether or not they got it. I've done this a few times where to me, it was more important to get them to reflect, you know, rather than collecting their notes and using it as formal assessment. You know, there was a few times where the students would say, oh, do you want this? And I said, no, this was just for you to get you to think in a different way. And so they appreciated it in that respect. So I have some comments for each individual model. So in the Hatton and Smith model, I think there's a lot of opportunity with the dialogic and the critical reflection. I think the dialogic might be a more natural way for the students to reflect, and we could help them to provide some examples. So in that respect, reflection, they're asked to kind of almost like talk out loud or think out loud as if they were having a conversation. And then in the critical reflection, which is obviously the most advanced example in that model, I think it definitely lends itself to teaching authority is constructed and contextual. So that was of interest to me. In the Ash and Clayton model, I really liked the idea of making students think about things from different perspectives. So I think it was personal, academic, and civic, which I don't think they do. You know, I think students compartmentalize a lot and that they don't understand that skills are transferable. So I think getting them to do this exercise is really great because they, you know, will realize that they're learning and they're using skills in different ways and not just, okay, I learned how to do this for my paper and then I'm never going to ever use this again. I also think the process of explicitly writing out what they learned is really great. I think they'll find that they learned a lot more than they think they did. The only thing that I'm not 100% on board with is the rubric that was provided in the example. I think it's great at top level as a top level tool. And they say that it's a top level tool. But as you know, you and I've talked about and we've experienced, learning is a process and students might not get it at the first at first. So, you know, what does that really mean? Does it mean that either they got it 100% and they're correct or that they don't understand anything? In our experience working with our honor students when we both worked at Berkeley, we had a scale of, you know, different levels of understanding of a skill set. And, you know, I think if you were to use this model, you would definitely have to kind of break the rubric into smaller pieces, because to me, it's not all or nothing. Learning is a process, and your students are not going to get it on the first go. So if I was using this rubric, I'd probably build it out into at least two or more categories to really demonstrate growth and understanding. So what about you? What are some of your takeaways?
It's funny that you mentioned that rubric too, and it being binary, because I just attended recently in one of the LIS pedagogy chats on rubrics, and the people presenting, I don't remember their names, but I will put it in the show notes. They had developed an activity for a class where the students developed their own rubric for all of the assignments in their class. And someone had asked about one of the parts of one of the rubrics that was kind of binary. And the people presenting said, well, students kind of picked it that way. And it was, everybody was kind of shocked that students would want things to be kind of either you got it or you didn't, right? Because like you said, you would want opportunities to be on a scale rather than just like, well, I got it 0% or I got it 100. So I'll include their show notes for the conversation in our show notes because it was an interesting conversation and it kind of does expand on that a little bit, at least for their particular project. And I do agree a lot on the considerations that they included to start the article. And we kind of did use those a little bit going back to relook at some of the questions that that we put into our module, making it considering whether or not we were doing it written versus spoken, how might handicapped students who feel less familiar with conventional and discipline or context specific expectations deal with the reflection? What's the purpose? Are we really, is it the best option for what we're trying to accomplish? So I think they had some really great just starting out questions that you should start with before you even start developing a rubric or getting that far into it, which obviously we didn't do that. We were starting at the end. But now reading this going forward, it makes a lot of sense. Because there is a difference, like you said, between reflection questions that are personal, like to move students towards their own revelations or mental shifts, versus the ones where we might ask them to reflect on an information process and tell us how it differs from their previous process, or one that we showed them in a video, which is kind of what we did in the module. I agree, not everything needs to be assessed. It depends on the assignment. It depends on the context. Maybe it's just like a research log across a semester that they're doing, and that's for their own good, but you may take a look at the final product, or maybe it's a reflection on information privilege. We just want to see their thought process. We don't have to assign a level to it. It doesn't need to be part of a rubric. It can just be like, all right, cool, I see where you're headed with that, and open up conversation. And their models, both of the models, I believe, speak to the fact that some students don't necessarily know how to think reflectively in this way on their academic work. They're not used to it. So even just getting them to practice thinking in this way about their work is great and can set them up for further reflection for other classes. And one really important question that they pose is, how will you make it clear to students what you expect of them in terms of their reflection? And I have struggled with that in the past, just thinking that I could throw that question into my searching form and that they would just know what to say. And that was definitely something that I had to rectify over time. So now I try to provide guidelines that don't tell them exactly what to say, but to kind of provide examples of ideas that they could think about, questions that they could answer. And it's just kind of a guide to where their reflection should be going to at least get them started. And I think I've definitely gotten better answers since I started doing that. So we hope that that little review of assessing reflection questions and coming up with assessment questions will be helpful. And if you use any of those tips, please let us know on Twitter or via email. We'd love to hear from you.
So that wraps up another episode of The Librarian's Guide to Teaching. Here's where you can find us. You can find the podcast at librarian_guide. You can find Jessica at librarygeek611. You can find me, Amanda, at historybuff820. And you can always email us at infolitteachingpodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to rate and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen. We would love to hear from you in the reviews as well.